This double CD of a talk by Jeff Corkish, MBE, MHK, was recorded at Peel Centenary Centre on the evening of Wednesday, the 5th of May, 2010. His talk was entitled From Steam to Hot Air. Disc 1, Steam, relates to Jeff's days with the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company. Disc 2, Hot Air, is about his current role as an MHK in Tynwald. Enjoy.
Well, that's all the announcements over. So, without any more ado, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Jeff Corkish, MBE, MHK. He is going to talk to us tonight about steam to hot air. So, Jeff, if you would. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Madam Secretary. Can I first of all start by thanking you for the invitation to come to the renowned Peel Heritage Trust series of talks. I'm aware that there's a great passion and a great enthusiasm here at Peel Heritage Trust, and I hope that this is not going to spoil the run so far tonight. Is this a talk? I don't know. Is it a ramble through the past? Probably yes. But whatever it is, I hope that you'll enjoy it. The title is sort of says it all, really. I was asked to do this once before, and it's sort of grown a little bit. From Steam to Hot Air. I joined the Isle of Man Steam Packet in about 1969, straight from school. Why did I join the Steam Packet? Well, 1969, not all that long ago, and yet, when you think about it, yeah, quite a long time ago, what was on offer for a chap from school? Probably Isle of Man Bank, Isle of Man Government, Isle of Man Steam Packet Company. And they were the three places that you would go to because it was job security, you could work your way up through the ranks, and it was a safe and secure job for life if you stuck at it. Nowadays, I think people don't stick at a job the same because there is so much available now for young people, and that's a great thing for the Isle of Man to boast about. No longer is there a narrow choice of things to do here in the Isle of Man. Tremendous outlets for young people. They don't have to go away to university now, really. We have tremendous educational opportunities at the Isle of Man College and again at the International Business School. So now a huge choice, and that's a great stride. So I came from school to the Isle of Man Steam. I applied to the job and got the job in the parcels office. Now the parcels office was a big, cold, dismal, I suppose, really red brick building on the corner opposite where the bus station used to be, if you remember. A set of grey granite steps going up to the front. You walked inside, there was bare boards, no carpeting, huge big hall, if you like, dark, and when I joined it was December, so they were dark, long days. You started out in the morning, you started at 8 o'clock, because the boat left at 9 o'clock, and my job there was to have the office open for people to come in to send stuff away on the boat. Now, there's a huge amount of stuff went through that particular office. One of the lasting memories I have is the lighting. The heating was almost non-existent, so it was very, very cold in the winter, stifling hot in the summer. The lighting was a flex from the ceiling, two lights. The flex was about 10 foot long, with a little plastic, with a little bulb and a plastic cover on the top with about that much dust on the top. And that was steam packing. That was part of the heritage, if you like, of the steam packing. Nobody dared remove that dust, because that was the dust of ages. You mustn't touch anything at all. No computers, no calculators. I remember going in and they had waybills, and people would come in to send their stuff away all over England, and it would all be brought down to the boat before the boat sailed. And I remember on the first or second day, I said, can I use the calculator? And I was... There was a look of absolute horror. You know, calculators, in your head, boy, in your head. And we had to total everything up. Calculators, computers, never even been heard of. Now, does that make you feel pretty old, really? It makes me feel old, and I'm not. So he says. Dusty and grimy. And my boss, my first one, this is coming from clinical school, to this place, and my boss was a chap called Dougie Cowley, whose wife was the landlady of the British Hotel on the North Quay. Now, I don't know whether anybody remembers a chap called Dougie Cowley. He was a captain of the Black Watch, a tough man, and he weighed about 25 stone, huge man. And it got to be that in the morning, on these cold, dark, dismal mornings, you dreaded this coming round the corner, and all hell was let loose when he came in. Nothing was ever right. And his wife was a member of the Miles family, who were great hoteliers in the Isle of Man. And he would rule with an absolute rod of iron. I remember asking for my first holidays. There was no sign of any holidays, so I said, I knocked on the door. I was young and inexperienced. Knocked on the door, Mr. Cowley, when can I take some holidays? He looked me up and down, holidays? I'll tell you when you have any holidays, right home. So I went and sat down again. Next thing he came out to the door, lifted this big sheet of paper, locked himself in the room, and came back out, stuck up on the door, on the wall, tapped me on the shoulder and said, you want holidays? There's your holidays. So I went to the wall and had a look, and there I was, the last week in October and the first 2 weeks of November. That was it. That was your summer holidays. So I was glad to hear Mr. Chairman saying that next week, this is the last, because next week is the start of summer. So I'll hold you to that and wait to see what the weather's like. Now, the deliveries around Douglas were undertaken by the Steam Packet Company, and those of you who spent any time in and around Douglas in those days may remember that the delivery was made by little blue wagons, Scammels, three-wheeler Scammels. You remember the three-wheeler Scammels? Yeah, three-wheeler Scammels. And the drivers were all, in the main, old men. And these are fellas who had been in the war together, had great stories, great camaraderie, great respect for each other and for the job and for the world, really. And I learned a tremendous amount from these people. And they always referred to their wagon as a horse and trailer. And that was going back to the days when they did deliver by horse and trailer. The parcels office was... also, the place where lost property from the ships came up to and were registered and put away in a cupboard. And we had one chap who lived up in Williston, a heavy man, one of the nicest men you could ever meet, gentle, as they all seemed to be in those days. There was no scoring points of each other. They were all good friends and been through hard times together. And he would come in with... he had a wonderful, wonderful vocabulary. Some I can't repeat here, but he had a wonderful vocabulary as well. He would say, in the summer, he would say, my word, young fella, it's hot out here. The persecution is running down my back. I honestly heard that. You hear me talking about it now. He came in one day and said, got some lost property here for you. And I said, yes, Ike, what's that? He said, it's a pair of barnacles. I said, barnacles? And he said, yeah, you have a pair of binoculars. And all these things you remember, it just helps to bring you, keep your feet down on the ground. All the goods would come through Liverpool, of course. There was no Hesham. Passenger boats and cargo boats came from Liverpool. We had a great rapport with the people at Liverpool. We spoke to them every day. In those days, anything and everything travelled on board the ships, the Mona's Isle, Manxman, the Manxman class, the 1950 steamers. And you may remember, if you travelled, seeing a lot of deck cargo, you would see fruit and veg lying on the side, and every now and again a sailor coming along. And sometimes you have a passenger as well helping themselves. And one of the lasting memories too was seeing farmers sending for calves coming over, and the calves would be lying on the deck the whole way over, 3.5-4 hours on the boat, wrapped in a Hessian sack with just their heads sticking out and two little eyes looking. I used to go down of a day to collect the papers and things. You'd see these poor little calves down there, but that was the way it was. We had a chap in Liverpool who was he was like the loading officer it would be now. His name was Jack Tilley. Never met Jack Tilley, but knew his voice. He had a lovely Scouse voice. We had a telex. That was the height of modernity. We had a telex, and the telex would tell us each day what time the ship left Liverpool, and then in sections would tell you what was on board the ship. The first item was the number of passengers, and then after that, for some reason, it was cars that were coming over. And the cars would be coming to the Athol garage, to Mulcrease's and Davies garage, and some of the garages that aren't even here now. And I can still remember some of the telephone numbers, which are only four digits. The Athol garage was 4628, Mulcrease's was 3307. And it was my job as office junior to go through that list, ring round all the people that were had goods and tell them to be down at the boat. We knew what time it left, we knew what time it arrived. There was never any delays in those days, strange to say. Be down to pick them up. Jack Tilley would come on the phone. He had a wonderful Scouse accent. And the new kind of car came out on the block. He would ring up and he would say, all right, sir, we've got three Rovers from Mulcrease's and six Peugeots. Peugeots? Peugeots. So to this day, when I see a Peugeot, it's a Peugeot and always will be a Peugeot. Interestingly enough, regarding the steam packet, I've always sung in the church choir, and my first choir master was Roy Eason, who you may remember as High Bailiff and later Deemster and Clerk of the Rolls here. A very small man, but a huge, huge man in a lot of respects, and he was one of my mentors. And he started his working life in the summer holidays working for the steam packet. And he said, "You still get advice?" And I said, "Yes, we still get things going through." He said, "My job when I was leaving school and doing this, it all came in code so that the customs people wouldn't know what was coming over." And so the steam packet never paid duty. And here he was, Deemster and Clerk of the Rolls. Can't see that all those years ago. So now, of course, a steam packet, any business now, we know fax is almost out of the way. We still sometimes use that. And telex is relegated to the history books, another bit of heritage, and now it's very much email. And email is a great way of keeping in touch with people all over the world. We all, I'm sure, keep in touch with people all over the world now. Easy, just wrap it around, off it goes. Now, and everybody thinks it's so easy. Now, I had a salutary tale not so long ago about how to be very, very careful sending out emails, because it's very, very easy. There was always problems sending telexes, always problems sending all kinds of different things. with an email, of course, if you get one letter wrong, you know, it can go anywhere, anything can happen kind of thing. It's so easy, we don't think of that. You know, sometimes you'll send something which may be a little bit cheeky and you think, oh God, it's gone to somebody who shouldn't have got it, but it does. So I had this salutary tale, which I'll just relay to you now, which will just serve a lesson that has to me. It was regarding people in America. So there's nobody from America here, is there? By the way, no, we'll carry on then. It was a Minneapolis couple, this is the story as I got it. They decided to go to Florida to thaw out during a particularly icy winter. We've just been saying we had an icy winter here, and there's a winter we could do to go to Florida ourselves. And they planned to stay, they're a romantic couple, they planned to stay at the same hotel where they spent their honeymoon 20 years earlier. And because of hectic schedules, it was difficult to coordinate their travel plans, so the husband left Minnesota and flew to Florida on the Thursday with his wife flying down the following day. So the husband checked into the hotel. There was a computer in the room, as there often are now in these hotels, and he decided to send an email to his wife, because it's so easy now to just, so he thought, I'll send this email to the wife. However, he accidentally left out one letter off her email address, and without realizing the error, pressed the button and off the email went. Well, meanwhile, somewhere in Houston, Texas, a widow had just returned from her husband's funeral. He had been a minister, and he called to glory following a heart attack. The widow decided to check her emails, expecting messages from relatives and friends, as she would. And after reading the first message, she gave out a cry and fell on the floor, fainted. The widow's son rushed into the room, found his mother on the floor, and saw the computer screen, which read, "To my loving wife. Subject, I've arrived. Date, that day. I know you're surprised to hear from me. They have computers here now, and you are allowed to send emails to your loved ones. I've just arrived and have been checked in. I've seen that everything has been prepared for your arrival tomorrow. Looking forward to seeing you then. Hope your journey is as uneventful as mine was. P.S. It sure is damn hot down here. So be very, very careful when sending." That probably wouldn't happen. That wouldn't happen in the days of telex and fax. There you are. Drugs, big issue now in drugs, and we're all worried and concerned of how we deal with drugs. You would think in the Isle of Man, surrounded by water, that we could keep on top of drugs. But people who are concerned with drugs are very keen and up to every trick there is. In my days, down at the Steam Packet when I first started, drugs arrived in huge big tea chests and were delivered to all the chemists around the Isle of Man. No security. Security? Never heard of security. Didn't need security. Like the holy city, the gates were open wide. People came and people went. Later on, we had a port unit, which was a deterrent, and I recently tried to get the port unit to go back down and be there as a deterrent now and use sniffer dogs. But for some reason, the authorities here and the police have their own way, they think, of dealing with it, but I'm not going to that political bit right now. Just going back to, I sort of mentioned about when you saw the fruit and veg lying on the as deck traffic on the boat. The number of times when I was down on the piers, you would see in the mornings people coming down, delivering goods down on board, and there'd be the same people every now and again you see come down and say to the van driver, "Can I give you a hand to carry that on?" And he'd say, "Oh yes," and carry on and stay on. You get a free trip across. You get to know these people who were living back and forward. In the summertime, you said, which is coming next week. In the summertime, the steam packet vessels would be packed with tourists. And as a member for tourism, now I wish it was the same now. The people would flock to the Isle of Man from all over England, as they had done for a long, long time. This was before the days of cheap package flights to the Costas and wherever. And certainly, and your various Wakes Week, and I remember the Scottish Wakes Week. The Scottish were great travellers. They travelled to the Isle of Man. They came down from Ardross, and it was a six-hour sail, 130 miles down, a very scenic route, because you're in sight of land virtually all the time. They would come down. They didn't have suitcases. They had big hampers, big wicker hampers. They brought everything. They brought food with them. And when they got there, here's another thing you may remember. There were porters on the pier. Porters with big barrows, with huge big shacks.
Oh, handcarts.
Handcarts, that'll do. And the men who were driving the handcart were old men. I never saw a young man amongst them. They were all old men. And this luggage was going from the pier, sometimes up to Belmont Terrace, up on Peel Road, uphill, you know, and then we collected again to come back. The other great things that used to happen in those days, more so than they do now, there were more vessels then to do this kind of thing, and people were geared up to do it, were day excursions coming in. We used to have the Workington Gala was one of the great ones. The port boat would be packed with people coming in for that, and people coming for day excursions, groups of men coming over for and you'd see them coming off, having a, you know, come to the Isle of Man for a great day excursion out. They'd all straight up then the viaduct, up past the steam packet offices, past the Pepperell Hotel, and the first place to drop was Yates's Wine Lodge. And Yates's Wine Lodge is where they'd stay all day. And they'd come back on the boat and you'd say, had a great, oh, what a fantastic day in the Isle of Man. You'd see Yates's Wine Lodge all day. And I've seen this happen. How did they come back? In some cases, it was those fellas with the handcarts. And I've seen two or three bodies lying on them, bringing them down, getting to the side of the boat and just throwing up the shafts, and these bodies would just fall out onto the pier and off they go, having had a wonderful time in the Isle of Man. And you may remember too the classic steamers, we'll call them, they were called the classic steamers, the 1950s, Snaefell, Mona's Isle, King Ori, Manxman, could carry cars, limited numbers of cars. Sometimes, depending on the state of the tide, they would drive over boards, but sometimes they would be craned on. And I've seen some wonderful faces of people seeing their new car going up and back down again, and motorbikes swinging back and forward. Now, another question I was often asked by people is, we had boats called the Manxman, King Ori, Ben McCree. Why are all ships, no matter what their name is, called a she? You never refer to a ship as a he. It's always, or the ship she'll be in. She'll be in shortly, she'll be in whatever. So I was once asked to find out why a ship was called a she, and I can tell you that a ship is called a she because there's always a great deal of bustle around her. There's usually a gang of men about. She has a waist and stays. Men will remember those days. It takes a lot of paint to keep her good looking. It's not the initial expense of breakthrough, it's the upkeep. She can be all decked out. It takes an experienced man to handle her correctly. And without a man at the helm, she's absolutely uncontrollable. She shows her top sides, hides her bottom, and when coming into port, always heads for the boys. That's why it's called a she. You'll remember perhaps the old sailing on those old ships, as I do. One thing I do remember about sailing on the old Manxman class vessels is the smell. And you may remember this too, because when you got on board, there's a lovely smell of the sea, the woodwork, and the oil engine room smell. And I could still, if I was to shut my eyes in a quiet room, I would still smell the smell coming up from the engine room, and that gentle turn of the, as it was idling, if you like, and lovely moquette seating, and wooden panelled lounges, and I only mentioned here before the silver service restaurants. Now, people still say to me, and when I was still at the Scene Packer, people would say, why don't we have a service? Why don't you have a service in Switzerland? So when we had the new ship, and I'll mention the Ben McCree a little later, when the Ben McCree came into service, I thought this would be a good idea to do this, because, you know, you look on the car deck and see the number, the type of cars there, you know, there's no longer beat-up old wrecks of cars, they're all pretty classy cars, and big cars, and people who can afford to spend money, and who would like to spend part of the time sailing on the Ben McCree, 3-4 hours on the ship, eating a nice meal, sober service. And people will still say to me, the best time I ever ate a steak, Mr. Corkish, was in the Steam Packet sober service. So I thought, this would be a good idea. So I had a word with the boss, Hamish Ross, and I told him about this, and he had a little think of it, and we got the plans ready, and it was nearly done. I thought, this is going to be it, this is going to be fantastic. It was the first lounge on the Ben McCree, which has a lovely vista out over the sharp end of the ship, and in the end, it got to the, I don't know if it got the father's aboard or not, but it was stopped dead, and we never had a silver service restaurant. In the island here now, we're trying to bring up the standard of eateries throughout the Isle of Man, hotels, cafes, wherever they may be. And only a short while ago, I was talking to some people. We were trying out, and I've only been to that. I've been to that restaurant, which is in the bottom of the in the Palace Hotel, the Hilton Hotel, which is called the down by the in where the casino is. Atlantis, I just want to find out who goes gambling, right? Thank you very much. The Atlantis, lovely, lovely meals in there. Some people are in there sitting having their meal, and on the table next to them, just reminiscent of those days in gorgeous splendour on the old steam packet ships, they were sitting holding hands, giggling, laughing, enjoying a glass of wine, the meal, looking around great, and the people next door to them looking at them, yeah, nice, you know. At some point during the meal, the gentleman of the couple slid off his chair and fell underneath the table. And so this chap was with us when they were along. He said, excuse me, madam, your husband has just slid underneath the table. Well, she said, that's not my husband. He's just walking through the door. Now, that wouldn't happen on a steam packet ship, I'm sure. But there was a style and quality which was totally steam packet in those days, and we've been mentioning it a little bit early on, you know, I can still think of, and I still think of all those days when people came from all over England, certainly from the Lancashire towns, Wakes Weeks, mill towns, who'd saved up all year to come to the Isle of Man for a holiday, getting on board a ship, perhaps upgrading to first class, because they had first class steerage, and going in and sitting and being waited on by stewards with silver service. It must have been what a start to a holiday coming to the Isle of Man. One of the other things I remember going out from the Isle of Man, that doesn't happen now, I don't know why, was rabbits used to be sent out from the Isle of Man. Used to be a huge, well, not a huge, but a lot of people who every night would spend their nights out on the lamp, as they used to say, up around the airs and places, after rabbits. Now, we had a cut-off point. The boat left at 9 o'clock every morning, and at 5 to 9, the boat blew. People would check their watches, 5 to 9, we'd be late for work. Or I'm early, 5 to 9, regular slot work, and at 9 o'clock, the ship went. And they're always at about 20 to a quarter to nine when they sort of finished offering the papers, were ready to go down to the ship. These fellows had come in these old vans with huge tea chests that they'd recycled from chemist shops, full to the brim of rabbits, going to Manchester meat market. And there were so many rabbits, the top of the tea chest box was nailed down, it was like that. And ears and legs and bits sticking out. You had to get. And every time I see a rabbit now, I can still remember those days. And in those days too, there was no crematorium. No crematorium in the Isle of Man. So another part of my duties as a junior clerk was to, every now and again, those people who wanted to be cremated, the undertaker would have to make the arrangements. The undertaker would come in to the office. One man who I remember very, very fondly was a chap called Eddie Moore, of R.E. Moore and Co., which many of you will remember. One of the nicest men that ever lived, the big, tall man, always wore a black Homburg, a black three-piece suit with a watch chain, had a lovely face, nice glasses, a lovely pudgy nose, and three of the biggest hairs you've ever seen growing out of it. Lovely, lovely man. And he would come in and say, "How are you doing? Well, hello, Mr. Moore." You'd have to check then the coroner's certificate, death certificate, that's all right. Right, be down in the morning, Mr. Moore. Yes, be down usual time. So the undertaker would have to come down before the passengers. You didn't press it, don't want to be, you know. The coffin came in a coffin box, a big black metal box. So you let the ship know tomorrow morning at 7:15, 7:15, whatever, coffin box coming down. And then you go down later on with the papers, get on board, and you see these people all sitting on this box and saying, "Oh, weren't we lucky to get a good seat?" And having their breakfast, their sandwiches and a flask of tea. And so they went out as deck traffic and came back as a parcel, a little thing of ashes coming out. Marvellous, marvellous. And another great thing about those days too, which you will no doubt pine over, if tonight, after hearing a story about steam packet sailings and travel, you would think, "I think tomorrow, good forecast for tomorrow, you'll go down to the boat, you'll go away, and you can walk down to the boat and pay your money and go." No computers, nobody ever got turned away, and the boat would go, the boat would blow at 5 to 9, 9 o'clock the boat would go. First of all, the skipper would look over the bridge, give you a shout, "Everything all right?" "Yes, okay, Captain." Right, let go aft, so the rope would be splashing the water, and now we go on the blunt end of the ship, would come out, and the forecastle head would be tight up against the wall, and somebody would say, "You remember the big viaduct there with all glass right up, so you could see people and cars coming?" Every now and again, there'd be two or three people coming down with cases. Now, these days, if you were late, tough. You wait till the next boat, but tomorrow, tough. Then, so somebody would shout, "Two or three people coming down, Captain, hold everything." Well, the ship would be hard up against the forecastle head right up against the wall, and these people would come down, and this is health and safety at its very best. Come down with their suitcases, and some of the people just throw their cases over onto the forecastle head, the sailors coming out of the way. And then we'd help these people to climb from the pier over the railings onto the belly of the ship, and then a couple of sailors would haul them all over the top, send for the purser, the purser would come down, ask for their money, and they'd pay for their ticket, and off they'd go. Health and safety, my word, you know, marvellous. And of course, one of the great treats for me as a junior clerk was when it was bad weather, you had to get in the car and go to Peel, because the boat came in to Peel. It was a great trip out. And one of the things you had to do, it wasn't the worry about getting the papers to check up on what was on board the ship, so you could write the papers up and deliveries and things like that. It was, make sure you go to the little baker's shop just up the road here. Now it's shut. Who's up that little baker's shop? Kareem's. That's it. Had to go there for pies and bring the pies and try to keep them hot all the way back. Tremendous. And you'll remember the midnight sailings, of course. Yeah. Number of times people have said to me when I was an office a junior, "What time is the midnight boat going on?" And you'll remember, and I always used to say, 5 to midnight, because that was the official time. 23:55 hours was the official time that the boat left. And you'll remember alongside the brown box, the booking box, where you went, yeah. And they made a wonderful garden shed when they were all done. I had one in my back garden. And marvellous. We'd have sailings towards Ross and Belfast, Fleetwood, Land, Dudno. Tremendous, tremendous days. And tremendous characters, too. By the way, the other thing about that, change came very slow to the steam package. I was chairman of the staff committee for a long time. One of the ideas I came up with, because I'd been there and done it, was I was a fellow in the booking box for a long, long time. For the midnight sailing, it had to be down at 10:30, although nobody came to sail on the boat until about 11:15, so you're around talking to fellas, and then there'd be a big queue of people all wanting their ticket to go away, £7, and you had to have a word with the carpenter to get a light from the ship, because there was no shore light. So you had a cage light, so the carpenter's job was to come and fix the light up, bring the cage light out. It came in through the back, through the ship, through the back door, and you hung it on a hook in the box. But it meant that because the door wouldn't shut right, because the flex was there, and the little hatch at the front, there was a through draft all the time. And the number of times there were £10 notes and £5 notes flying about down around there. And there was one, it wasn't me, fortunately, but sometimes in the state of the tide, the boat had to move so they could readjust the gangway. And there's been a few instances where, you know, nobody thought of the booking clerk in the box. You've got to move the ship because of the tide. It's not safe for passengers, and the boat would move, and the box would move down, because they were all on brass wheels and up and down. I remember the characters, too, in the... again, it didn't happen to me, but as we had a big engineering shop in Fort Street, which could manufacture anything and anything. A moulder shop, absolutely a real marvellous place. Again, not there anymore, or certainly not to the standard it was then. And many a junior would be told to go over to Fort Street for a long stand. And the other great one was go over to Fort Street to the engineering shop and get some red oil for the port light. They would always know, a poor fellow would go over and say, some red oil, they'd go, oh yeah, just wait there, will you please? And half an hour later. We had everything is too, and probably what I'm saying is that everything is too sophisticated now, I think, you know, and it's not me being romantic, I think it's just sensibility in the world is sort of disappearing somewhere. And we had a chap there, he was head cashier, lovely man, and this couldn't happen today, more of a pity, I don't know what it is really, but he had a glass eye, nothing wrong with that, but when we went decimal in 1971, went decimal, we were working on the doing some stuff, and somebody shouted, "Stop! I've dropped the decimal point." And he took his eye out and went along the floor. His other big treat was to say, "I'm just going to the toilet. Keep an eye on that one." And for a young man, you thought, "Oh, lovely, lovely stuff." The other thing which we used to do a lot of was scattering of ashes at sea. Now, that doesn't happen now because, again, health and safety and regulations, it's contaminating the sea and you're not allowed to scatter, except, I think, it's 3 or 12 miles.
You are allowed, but you have to have permission.
But it used to be, in fact, before we got permission, 3 or 12 or so, that was all heavily. Now, you'll remember a steam packet captain called Ginger Brighton. Ginger Bryson is one of the characters, of many characters, ashore and sailing, certainly sailing with the steam package. Everybody knew when Ginger Bryson was ashore and was going for a haircut. He used to go to Louis Kelly's The Barbers in Ridgeway Street. If you remember Louis Kelly The Barbers, Louis Kelly was a big, tall man with a huge head, long head, white, tufty hair, with a bike. I don't know why he had the bike, he never rode it. He just wheeled it up and when he back and forth to work. And they'd always know when Ginger Brighton was ashore, because Ginger Brighton would go in, queue for a haircut, there's no booking, you'd have a haircut, and they'd sing Sankey hymns until the time came to get his haircut. And all you could hear in Ridgeway Street was all these throw out the lifeline and from Ginger Brighton. Now, Ginger Brighton, like all the captains, had a term of scattering ashes at sea. It used to be done from the wing of the bridge, latterly from the aft end of the ship. It's a lovely, lovely ceremony The ashes are placed in a flag. There's a special way that they're folded, so that when the flag is opened, the ashes don't come back, they go out. But in those days, ginger brides would be up on the wing of the bridge and would have the casket and would say whatever words were said. So after some little while, he decided to knock this on the head. He said it took a fortnight to brush the ashes out of his jacket. So he stopped doing it. And then one day, the chief officer took on that duty then, with Ginger Brightson. One day, after doing a scattering of ashes at sea, a letter came from the lawyer of this deceased person to say, thank you for doing what you did, from the family. Here's a cheque for £100. After which Ginger Brightson did everyone. Whether he got any money or not, I don't know. But that was another little change there too. Steam Packet had a great, great history, of which I was never tired of telling people about, as I had to in my role later on. I just for the sake of telling you, because it was, you know, just how things have changed, and the Steam Packet heritage is a great heritage for the Isle of Man to remember and hopefully build on. In the First World War, the Steam Packet had a fleet of 15 ships, steamboats and paddle boats. And the fleet was reduced, at the outbreak of war, the fleet was reduced to 4 within a few months. The Admiralty requisitioned the ships. The King Norrie, the Peel Castle, by the way, was one. Ramsay and the Empress Queen remained here to do the service for the Isle of Man. The reason why steam packet ships were purloined by the Admiralty was that they were faster than the Royal Navy ships. They were fast ships. They were thin. They weren't car carriers in those days, so they were narrow hulls. And there were 4 ships left. The Douglas, which was built, the only steam packet ship to have been built in Douglas at the Tong, which was later sold and became a gun-running ship in the American Civil War. Amazing how a little ship from the Isle of Man. These ships are only about 1,000 tonnes each. You know, the Ben McCree now is 12,500 tonnes, how small they were. And the Viking and the then Ben McCree converted to carry seaplanes. King Ari III, you may have seen in the museum at Douglas, a wonderful oil painting of the King Ari steaming, leading the surrender of the German high seas fleet up to Scapa Flow. What a tremendous honour for the ship. And the King Ari was used by the Admiral as his flagship. What a tremendous honour that the steam packet ship, a little place out the Isle of Man, doing all this. And if I remember, I think it was the Manxham became the first aircraft carrier that the Royal Navy ever had, with being able to launch Sopwith Camels. I don't know how they got them back again the other day, but they could go. But again, steam packet ship making naval and aviation history, little place in the Isle of Man. And of course, we had, you know, the 4 ships lost at Dunkirk. Then the Second World War, The fleet had grown again to 16 vessels. To climb up to that just shows the number of people that were travelling and holidaymakers that were coming, and 11 went to the war, requisitioned by Admiralty. Finest hour was probably Dunkirk, Operation Dynamo, when 8 vessels were involved in taking, I think there were 332,000 troops. Of all those troops taken off the beaches there, 24,669 troops were taken to safety by steam packet ships. That equates to 1 in 14. What a tremendous history and heritage to look back on. And the Lady of Man, which was built in 1930 to celebrate the centenary of the company, built at Camel Laird's by the young men had gone the craftsmen that were left at those times, so it was a really Rolls Royce of the ship. At Dunkirk, it did service at Dunkirk, carrying up to 5,000 troops at a time away from the beaches. Absolutely fantastic. And one of my final jobs in the steam packet was to go to the National Arboretum in Staffordshire to plant some trees there as a lasting memorial to steam packet ships and crew that had lost their lives at Dunkirk. I'd heard this story in the steam packet, didn't know whether it was true or not, and then I buy two newspapers a week. One is the Daily Telegraph on a Saturday, the other is the Isle of Man Courier. Daily Telegraph, the best page to read, one of the first pages I read, have a look at the front page. The best page is the obituary column. If you read the obituaries, absolutely tremendous. They are potted histories of people who you pass on the street and people who would have no, very immodest people, and have had fantastic lives. And I'd heard this story, and here before me this day, and I cut it out of the paper, was this story about Major General Breeden. And this is it. And I'd heard this story, thought it was not one of the steam packet stories. Major General Balla Breeden, who died yesterday aged 88, was awarded an MC in Bar when serving with the Royal Ulster Rifles in Palestine in 1938 and an immediate DSO in Italy in 1944. He won an immediate bar to his DSO in 1945 and received another bar when commanding the 2nd Battalion, the Parachute Regiment, in Cyprus in 1957. He was also twice mentioned in dispatches. So here is a fella who is a tremendous hero, tremendous noble officer. During May 1940, Breeden was commanding a company of the Royal Ulster Rifles in the fighting retreat from Belgium. They marched from Louvain to Dunkirk, still carrying all their weapons, fought off numerous German attacks on the way. They then boarded an Isle of Man Channel steamer at Dunkirk. And just as Breeden slumped down to catch up with sleep after coming through all this absolute hell on the way there, plus the beaches, he saw a man in a white coat. On discovering that he was a steward, Breeden inquired, "Any chance of a pint of beer?" "Yes, sir," replied the steward, "but I can't serve you till we're 3 miles out." The ship was rolling from side to side as bombs fell all around her. Eventually, Breeden got his beer just before landing in Kent. "I thought to myself," he said, "we can't lose the war with people like that about." And there it was in the Daily Telegraph. This story come to life. Absolutely fantastic. I was able to move on a little bit and eventually became a sales manager, which is a great job, a lot of travel. I know time's getting on. I'll move along a little bit. I'm coming to this, the end of this little bit. And we don't want to burn the water, do we? I spent a lot of time in Southern and Northern Ireland at the time of the Troubles, and just showed the resolve of these people, the Northern Irish people. We had our agent in Belfast, who, when I travelled there, he would meet me and we would do whatever business we did. The first time I went over, he said, "Right," I always said at the same hotel, "I'm having a hotel at White Abbey, just outside Carrickfergus Way." He said, "Right, I'm putting you in this hotel." He said, "It's not a bad hotel." And tonight, he said, "We're going out for a meal." Now, he said, "It's in the centre of Belfast, the meal." He said, they'll frisk you for knives, guns, grenades. If you haven't got any, they give you some." marvellous people. We were in a car park in Newry, just having a cup of tea in a cafeteria. We came out, got in the car, he looked up, and there's always helicopters, cameras, hovering. And he said, "Look at that. You've been up there for 10 minutes, I think it's broken." They got on with life. I eventually finished up on the steam packet. The job I always wanted was the communications manager, PR. Job I always wanted, best job I ever had. Did a lot of travelling with that, a lot of meeting people, a lot of radio and television work. Lovely. One of the met lots of people and some quite famous people. One I remember was going to Liverpool. Post office. You remember Paul McCartney had designed a stamp for the Isle of Man post office? Very good, like a flower. So you had always marvellous. Anyway, yes. But anyway, that was it. So I was pretty friendly and worked closely with the Liverpool museums and galleries who were responsible for Liverpool getting the City of Culture status. And I was invited over, because we did a bit of sponsorship, and I was invited to this do. Went to this do. Doc Tilbury was with me, unfortunately, because it was a joint post office thing, because they were doing a stamp, you see. So we were invited, she was invited to the stamp, and we were invited into the inner sanctum where Paul McCartney and Heather Mills was, and sat with them and had a great, spoke for quite a long time with them. Very talk of the times he came to the Isle of Man with his parents. And if anybody was to say, can you remember what he said? And I really couldn't. I spent all my time looking at her legs. But she had a pair of trousers on. I thought, now which one is it? And I thought, that must be money, because you couldn't tell one from the other. It was absolutely tremendous. I did a speech sheet, and we probably finished, well, very quickly finished this. They did a speech which finally finished into the Island Connections magazine that goes around all the ships now. And one of the stories that I had in there, we always had a very close connection with Liverpool, of course, because that's the port that we sailed to. And one of the stories that we featured in there was about the Ferrari Formula One team who fired there. We had a wonderful relationship with the Liverpool people, and we still do have a wonderful relationship with Liverpool people. I don't want this to harm them. The Ferrari Formula One team fired their entire pit crew yesterday. The announcement was followed by Ferrari's decision to take advantage of the British government's work for the Dole scheme and hire unemployed youths from Merseyside. The decision to hire them was brought on by a recent documentary on how unemployed youths in Liverpool were able to remove a set of car wheels in less than 6 seconds and without the proper equipment, whereas Ferrari's existing crew could only do it in 8 seconds. This was thought to be an excellent yet bold move by Ferrari management, as most races are won and lost in the pits. Ferrari would then have an advantage over every other team. However, Ferrari expectations were easily exceeded, as during the crew's first practice session, not only were the boys from Bootle able to change the tyres in under 6 seconds, but within 12 seconds they resprayed, rebadged and sold the vehicle to McLaren. Marvellous. Then came tremendous times. Change came. We had the, was it 1994, perhaps, was the fast crafts first came to the island. And wonderful, wonderful times, arranging trips and PR trips. And I arranged one for the Women's Institutes. I don't know anybody here on it. We're on it, John. Women's Institutes around. I thought, this would be a good idea. And they all came. And Vernon Kidney was the master, the late lamented Vernon Kidney. He was up on the bridge. I went up to him when we came out. I said, Vernon, any chance of, got this idea, as we pass each place around the Isle of Man, where these people are from, because it was the Glen May, WI, Peel, WI, Ramsey, W, Mackle, WI. I said, bring them up onto the bridge and see if one pass. Die, all right then, go on. He was pretty good, Vernon. Well, he was delighted, because they all come onto the bridge. I ushered them up onto the bridge, and Vernon, captain, hat on, the lot. Well, they all wanted a kiss from the captain. Vernon was in as absolute. and they all came on, and we had strawberries and champagne. We had, John, you remember? Strawberries and champagne. And I remember all these ladies coming on, beautifully attired, nice hats, lovely suits. They had a wonderful day out. And when I was seeing them off the boat, they go, thank you very much. All these good WI women there. But they had a wonderful, wonderful, and we had a little old lady come up on the bridge one day. We were coming from Dublin. She went up on the bridge. We saw her there, and said, oh, how are you? Oh, this is wonderful. She said, so fast, yes. Would you like to come up on the bridge? No, never on the bridge, she said. Well, we'll bring her up onto the bridge as we perhaps get nearer to the island. Oh, that'd be lovely. So as the island came into view, very close, went down, brought her up. Captain said it might have been Vernon, I don't know. Brought her up. Well, you think, oh, maybe on the bridge, saw the bridge and the island coming into view. And he said, look at that. He said, look out through the port window there. He said, you can see the chickens. My word, she said, you've got good eyesight. Hardly see the cows. And then, just to bring this part to a halt, we had the last big job, I suppose, I had was the new ship, the Ben McCree, which arrived here in 1998 on Tyndall Day. I was fortunate enough I was involved in building ships, but I had to go across to Rotterdam every now and again to see coming together. It was all built in different places around Rotterdam, and then cleverly brought together from all over, from miles away, and all fitted. And it's still working, so it must have been fitted all night. And they have a great, where it was launched, it was the biggest, it was the second biggest hall. Japan had the biggest hall, Rotterdam had the second, De Noord. And there was the ship. On one of the trips, one of the girls in the office said, do you have a national song in the Isle of Man? I said, yes, we've got two, actually. We have our own national anthem, but we have an unofficial national anthem, Ellen Van. Well, she said, I play in the local band. And we normally, when a ship is launched, we provide the music for the band. Oh, wonderful, I said, yes. I'll get the scores. Rang Ian Clegg, Manx's band. What were the band scores? Manx National Anthem and Ellen Van. Sent them off to this girl, I forgot her name now. Out to Rotterdam, and every now and again you'd be at work and the phone would ring, and there was this girl from Rotterdam, and she'd be saying, this is a serious steam packet of work going on here, adding up, you know, ledges and things like that. Third line, fourth bar, does it go big day arrived, off we went to Rotterdam. There was the ship in all its glory, I'll never forget it, and Joan Gelling, who was a sponsor of the ship, that's what they call it, smashed the bishop, poor old Noel Jones, recently passed, blessed the ship. We were all standing on the big platform, the ship towering right over us. We smashed the bottle, and the band played the Manx National Anthem, and then played Ellen Vannon. And I've never been so moved in all my life. I looked at Vernon, and Vernon was tears coming down. Joan was crying, and Donald Gelling was crying. And the boat slipped down and into the water outside. And the hall was packed to the gunwales with the villagers from around the Isle of Man. And, of course, the Ben McCree arrived here on Tyndall Day, 1998, 5th of July. We opened it that afternoon to the public. There were 5,000 people went round the Isle of Man. You remember the welcome it got. Manx Radio, the Man on the Line, every newspaper in the Isle of Man, people in the Isle of Man, rubbished the ship and said what a terrible thing it was. It doesn't look like a ship. That's not a steam packet ship. Probably the best ship the steam packet has ever had, the most reliable and fastest and biggest ship the steam packet has ever had. And I was doing a concert, I did a concert every year down at Andrus, and fundraising. It was a one-off concert which went on for about 18 years for the church roof. It must have been in a terrible state, the church roof. And after about 18 years, they finally gave up on it. The late Norman Ratliff, MLC, who you remember, introduced the concert. Well, here we've got Jeff Coe. And this was, the boat arrived July, Tyndall Day, August. Was the concert, so it was only a few weeks since the boat, and all this, and the papers, and the pictures, and letters, and complaints, and I had a stack like that in the office to reply to, and all, it was dreadful. We got to the, Norman Rattler. Norman got up and said, well, good to see Jeff Corbett in his concert party here again, give it all the big build up. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Jeff Corbett. I got up, walked to the front of the stage, the applause died down. I took a breath to say, thank you for your kind introduction, and nice to be here again. Took a breath, and a voice in the back, just as it died down, a voice in the back said, what about the new boat then, yes sir? absolutely gone, and I may as well have gone home. We had a great night, but such was the reception the Ben McCree got. But that was the final big event that I had at Sea Packet, and if somebody wanted to book me for the boat in the morning, I no longer work there. And that was the that was sort of a brief view through my time at the Steam Packet. We'll mention a little bit about politics, but we don't want to spoil a nice night. Mention that after we've had a cup of tea, Sam.